Variations on La Colonia from Rossini's Barbara Seville, arranged by Wenzel Zedlak and played there by the Netherlands Wind Ensemble. And there's more opera at the Proms tomorrow. At 4 o'clock, Wayne Marshall plays Wagner on the Royal Albert Hall organ, and at 6:30, Simon Rattle and the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment include Act Two of Wagner's Tristan and Isolde in their Prom. You're listening to BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's nearly 3 minutes past midnight, and time for the early music show. Lucy Skeeping looks back to the Europe of the first half of the 15th century, as it would have been seen by the famous composer Guillaume Dufay.
Clear voices of the Wellgus Ensemble with a motet in praise of the young Princess Malatesta. Royal Princess of Italy, great and noble, the heart worthy of all praise. It's by Guillaume Dufay, who was employed at the court of this noble family. And since the young lady was shortly to be married, to the son of the Byzantine Emperor no less, it goes on to sing his praises too. "Thy spouse hath made thee more illustrious, this master of the Romans, whom the whole world venerates, God's heavenly envoy." Dufay was one of the most admired composers of his age, and today we're going to be looking at his life and times, and what an eventful period it was. He was born near what is now the north French town of Cambrai in the last few years of the 14th century. This was a time of great transition as medieval Europe slipped gradually into the Renaissance and the philosophy of humanism began to debate and indeed question man's relationship with God. Throughout his life, Dufay was right at the heart of all this change. His was a restless existence, constantly on the move, and he found himself in the centre of some of the great political power struggles of the day. Dufay was part of what we now call the Burgundian school, composers who flourished in the land ruled by the Dukes of Burgundy. His large musical output contains masterpieces in every genre, from cyclic masses, simple hymns, dramatic cycles and secular songs, to what are called isorhythmic motets, like the one we've just heard, where specific rhythms and pitch patterns are repeated all the way through. He wasn't perhaps one of the great innovators of his time. His works generally follow the conventional framework and style that dominated the 15th century. But he did explore some of the newer techniques of vocal music of the age, and some 70 surviving manuscripts are to be found in all the countries where polyphonic music was cultivated. Home for Guillaume Dufay was, like so many musicians, wherever work took him. With no wife or children in tow, in fact being born illegitimate, he hardly had any family at all, he moved from court to court, employed by princes, popes and ruling families, and we can trace his journey through his music. Combray Cathedral was one of the most active musical establishments in the Low Countries. It was famed for its beautiful architecture, the quality of its singers, and it was said for the sweetness of its bells. Dufay was a chorister there from about the age of 12, and his exceptional talent was soon noticed by the authorities, who provided sponsorship and further study with some of the best masters available. Finally, though, in his early 20s, it was time to depart, and he left for Italy. This was, of course, the very font of the Renaissance, a place where he could study and find inspiration for his own compositions. The group Unicorn with Farewell Good Wines of Lanoir, one of Dufay's most heartfelt secular songs, and an example of how the humanist movement was now placing the emphasis on the words and real human emotions. The Renaissance was born in Italy, a cultural movement based on the revival of the ancient world as people saw it, personified by artists like Da Vinci and Michelangelo, and the patronage of Florence's dominant family, the Medici. It was into this extraordinary world that Dufay now came, a young man of 23. First stop was Rimini and the job with the Malatesta family. Not that there's any documentation of this appointment, but the clues, as always, are in the music. We know a number of Dufay's pieces were written specially for this family. One even lists by name five musicians from the Malatesta court. Among them would have been a player of the small keyboard instrument we're going to hear now, the clavicitherium. Dufay's melody Mille Bonjour, performed by Diabolus in Musica, directed by Antoine Gerbet. Well, tracing Dufay's travels certainly requires some detective work. We know that after just a year or so in Rimini, he probably went back up north to take church work in the Picardy area. A few years later, we find his name on a list in Bologna as a deacon on the staff of Cardinal Louis Almond. Another year, another town. But I expect he hadn't bargained for the turmoil that was to shortly affect the whole of Bologna. A revolt by the wealthy and, by all accounts, bloodthirsty Cannadoli family, which ended in the expulsion of the cardinal and his court. Out of a job once more, and of course the accommodation that came with it, Dufay now headed south to Rome to join the papal choir of Pope Martin V. In other words, to become part of the most important and most powerful institution in the Western world. His arrival came shortly after the end of a period of great turmoil for the Catholic authorities, the so-called papal schism, when no fewer than three different men all claimed to be the true pope. Funny thing is, all this had less to do with religion or differences in theological attitudes than with politics. Rivalry between powerful families had escalated into a major diplomatic crisis, so much so that much of Europe was divided over which pope should be recognised. When Pope Martin died, Dufay worked for his successor, Pope Eugene IV, and he composed this motet for his coronation at St. Peter's on March the 11th, 1431. Ecclesiae Militantis, seat of the church militant and of the clergy, Rome resounds to the pontiff and raises her liberated voice. She has named him Eugenius. O Lord, vouchsafe this perfect master a long life. Ecclesiae Militantis, Dufay's music for the Pope's coronation. I do think it's hard, almost 600 years on, to get a handle on just how very political the job of Pope was. There were challenges, revolts, murders, and inter-clan scuffles. In fact, the first thing Pope Eugene did when he was crowned was to massacre the friends and relations of his predecessor, Pope Martin. Well, you can never be too careful, can you? A truce was agreed. But the following 8 or so years produced yet another papal crisis, this time to do with the Council of Basel. Pope Eugene was suspicious of its purpose, and he promptly used his powers to dissolve it, which didn't go down too well. The dust was just beginning to settle when he was in trouble again, this time for his support of Florence and Venice in the Lombardy Wars. In a dramatic coup, the Colonna family now took control of Rome. They meant business, and their business meant it was time for a hasty Toad of Toad Hall-style papal exit. Disguised as a Benedictine monk, Eugene made his escape from Rome by water. No one seems to have been fooled, though, because apparently half the city turned out along the banks of the Tiber to pelt the great man with stones by way of a send-off. His destination? Florence. Probably with a few bruises. Two song melodies by Dufay, the first devotional and the second a secular love ballad, C'est la face I parle. So where was Dufay in all this papal hoo-ha? Well, as you can imagine, while Pope Eugene was getting tied up in the politics of the Council of Basel, not much was going on in the arts. Quite simply, the finances of the papal chapel were in crisis, and with Dufay's career virtually stalled, he was more than ready to move on. and accepted an invitation from Duke Amadeus of Savoy to be director of music at his chapel. Instead of papal politics, Dufay now found himself in the midst of great festivities. The wedding of the Duke's son. Must have been some party. Among the guests were the Duke of Burgundy and his entire retinue, friends, relations, servants, and, of course, musicians. One can only imagine the scene in the 15th century version of The Green Room as they swapped stories, discussed repertoire, maybe even passing on a tune or two. And if they were anything like today's musicians, no doubt discussing their wages. The following year, Dufay returned to the papal chapel. Not back to Rome, though, but to Florence, where the Pope had now established his court. I guess one of the first things he saw would have been the great cathedral. Begun in the 1290s, 140 years on, the building was still to some extent work in progress, with the wide space above the chancel still waiting to be topped by the famous dome. The problem was that no one had any idea how such a dome was to be built, given that it was to be even larger than the one on the Pantheon, and such a project hadn't been attempted since then. A competition was held to find an architect. The winner was Filippo Brunelleschi, and the Great Dome would occupy him for most of his life. Its completion in 1436 was marked by a grand ceremony, at which this motet by Dufay was performed. The brass instruments must have echoed around the building. Nuper Rosarum Flore, rose blossoms, the Pope's gift to you, Celestial Virgin, after the terrible winter. Come and adorn this church dedicated to thee with this great dome forever.
Thank you.
a motet written by Dufay for Florence Cathedral. Brunelleschi's Great Dome was one of the watersheds of the Renaissance. But while everyone was gazing upwards at this fantastic feat of 15th century engineering, well, wouldn't you just know it, back at ground level, another papal pretender or anti-pope had emerged. This time, the man with his eye on the top job was Dufay's old patron from Savoy, Duke Amadeus. And he wasn't going to let a little matter of excommunication by the current pope spoil his chances. He simply had himself crowned anyway, as Pope Felix V. What did Dufay do next? Well, rather sensibly, he decided it would be safer to return to Cambrai. Ensemble Unicorn with Dufay's J'ai mon coeur, played on fiddles, recorders, drum and hurdy-gurdy, or symphony as it was called in those days. Working throughout his life in religious establishments, it was natural that Dufay would explore what was one of the great musical developments of his time, music for the church mass. We're going to hear part of one he composed in the late 1450s, the Gloria from Missa se la fas ai pal, possibly written for the wedding of the Duke of Savoy's daughter to the heir to the French throne. Such an occasion was of great significance and took place with oodles of pomp and ceremony. And if the title sounds familiar, it is, because the Mass is based on a tune that we heard earlier. It's one of the first examples of a mass based on a secular tune.
Thank you.
The Gloria from Dufay's Missa c'est la face I parle, performed by the French ensemble Diabolus in Musica. From the mid-1440s, we find Dufay back in Cambrai once again. His aim now was to become a canon, and he obtained a law degree, possibly at Turin University. One clue as to his whereabouts is a delivery note with his name on it for no less than 36 lots of wine. How long it took him to drink it all, we don't know, but I expect it helped to wipe out some of the more stressful memories of his time in the papal choir. Now in his 50s and back on home soil, Dufay's travelling days were over, and he set up home in the house of the previous canon, where he remained for the last 30 or so years of his life. He drew up his will in the summer of 1474, requesting that, as he lay dying, the cathedral singers should perform his own Ave Regina Celorum, which we'll hear now to end the programme. And very personal it was. Hail, Queen of Heaven, Mistress of the Angels, have pity on thy Dufay as he slippeth, lest he fall into the fire where sinners burn. Sadly, owing to the speed of his illness, the cathedral singers couldn't carry out his wish, but we can be pretty certain, I think, that this talented, energetic and influential musician wasn't in any danger of slipping into the fires of hell. In fact, he's probably listening to this programme.
Hello from me, Susan Sharp, and welcome to Through the Night. This morning's concert's an organ recital from the 2009 Ansbach Bach Week, given in St. Gumberto's Church, Ansbach, by the Italian conductor and keyboard player Andrea Marcon, a leading performer of early music. He's playing music by four Italians, including Frescobaldi and Pasquini, and ending with one of Handel's organ concertos and a Bach prelude and fugue. Here he is first with a prelude in D minor by Vincent Lübeck, who was from the same generation as Buxtehude and organist of the famous St. Nikolai Church in Hamburg. This prelude's one of only nine organ works by Lübeck to have survived.
Thank you.
Andrea Marcon playing the prelude in D minor by Vincent Lübeck, who died in 1740. Girolamo Frescobaldi was born around 1583 and studied in Ferrara under the organist and madrigalist Luzzasco Luzzaschi. He inherited Luzzaschi's love for chromatic harmonies.